Your support is important to Living on Earth. Donate today by pressing the donate link on the left of this page. Every bit helps. And thanks.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwood, and you're listening to our winter season storytelling special. This year, we feature American storytellers from the Middle East and Africa. We'll hear the sounds of the evolving Senegalese tradition of griots in just a little bit, but first we turn back to Firouzé Dumas, a writer who moved to the United States from Iran when she was a child. Firouzé, let's pick up where we left off talking about one of my favorite subjects, food. I understand you have a story about what happened when you and your family started eating like Americans.
Exactly. So when I lived in Iran, my mother and I used to go to the markets, and they were open-air markets, very similar to farmers markets in America. And it was all very straightforward. Everything was just out there. Nothing was in boxes and cans. And if you wanted to buy fish, it was just right there on a pile of fish. So we used to go, and we'd buy ingredients. We'd come back, and my mother spent every single day of her life cooking. She would start making lunch, which was for us the main meal of the day, in the morning. And so it would always start with onions being fried. And then from there, it would be all the herbs, you know, the parsley and the scallion and the cilantro being cleaned and chopped and fried, and then the meats. And so there was this symphony of smells that used to always come out of our kitchen. And by the time it was lunchtime, our house was just filled with these wonderful smells. And my father would come home from work and we'd all have lunch together. When we moved to America, we all of a sudden discovered that there were all these foods here that were already prepared. So in Iran, if you opened our pantry or our refrigerator, all you found was basically raw rice or lentils, or in our refrigerator, there would be like raw meat and limes. And in America, I mean, we used to go to the grocery store and we would just buy these boxes and cans, not quite sure what's in them, and try them. And, you know, a lot of times people go to other countries and they discover the new culture through museums. Well, we were not cultivated people, so we just ate our way through America. We used to go to Baskin-Robbins, and we couldn't believe there's 31 flavors. And we tried every single one. I mean, back home, we were used to having either vanilla chocolate or Persian ice cream, which is made with rose water and saffron and cardamom, and it's very good. But I mean, all of a sudden we're here and we're having like blueberry cheesecake and, you know, pumpkin pie and ice cream. And our favorite American food was Kentucky Fried Chicken. And we used to go there 3 times a week, and my dad would come home with, you know, 2 buckets, and we'd basically fight for all the chicken skin at the bottom. And my God, we ate and we ate and we ate. Needless to say, by the time I was in third grade, and mind you, I'd come here in second grade, so it was 1 year later, there was a lot more of me than when we initially come to this country.
I bet.
We used to have relatives that would come and visit us. And after a while, you know, they'd say, my goodness, you know, Firouzé has just exploded. There's about 3 times more of her than there used to be. So finally, my parents decided that I needed to lose weight. The idea that they came up with was this. At the YMCA, every day from 3 to 4 was free swim hour, which meant that you could just go to the pool and do laps. The only problem was I didn't know how to swim. So my parents decided that I would go to the swimming pool for 1 hour and I would hold my hands to the side and just kick for 1 hour. Now, I was 8 years old, and anybody can tell you that this is a really bad idea. But my parents, God bless them, they thought that this would really cure me of all this extra weight. So every day, my father would take me to the YMCA, and I, of course, was very angry about this whole plan of theirs to go to the YMCA 5 days a week. So I would just sit in that pool, and when it was about 10 to 4, I would make sure that I would go into the pool just enough so I would be wet up to my neck. And then I would get out, and my dad would pick me up, and I'd be, of course, all wet. And so he'd say, oh, how was the kicking today? And I'd say, oh, I'm so exhausted. And he was so happy for me. And every day he'd say, wow, you know, I can already tell you look so good and you're getting stronger. And God bless him. He was so happy for me and so excited. I felt horrible that I was lying to him every day. But I didn't know what to do because I hated this whole kicking idea. So one day when my father dropped me off at the YMCA, I was in the locker room and I noticed that there were people coming from around the corner and they were all eating candy. So I went and I noticed that there was this huge box with glass and there was all these candy bars in it. And people were putting in coins and candy bars were coming out. And so this was my first introduction to the world of vending machines. So from that day on, I would go to my mother's coin purse after school, and I would steal a dime and a nickel every single day. And I would go to the YMCA, I would go into their gym, and I would put a dime and a nickel in the vending machine and buy a Babe Ruth bar. And then I would sit there and I would eat it at my leisure, and then I would go in the pool, just make sure I was wet enough to be convincing to my father. And then when my dad would pick me up, he would once again go into his speech of, wow, you look stronger, you look so good, I'm so proud of you. And of course, I felt even more guilty. So about 2 months of this goes by, and lo and behold, my parents noticed that my clothes are actually getting tighter. And by then, I was already wearing Sears size 14 Pretty Plus. They said, well, wow, how could this be happening? And my father said, maybe it's muscle. You know, muscles are bigger than... So they gave up on the YMCA kicking idea. And at that point, they actually took me to a weight doctor. But, you know, I never told them the truth about this until literally about 30 years later, when I one day said to my father, I said, you know, when you used to send me to the Y to kick for an hour? And he said, yes. And I said, well, I have to admit, I don't think I even kicked once. And he was so surprised. He said, I can't believe you lied to me. And I said, yeah, Dad, I did. And, you know, God bless him. I felt bad all over again.
Yes, America. Food in a box and a can and a machine, huh?
I think in the airports they should have a sign that says, you know, welcome to America, switch to elastic waistbands. I just want to add, I do have a small waistline now. It's his radio, but if people are visualizing what I look like.
Hey, I still need my elastic waistband. Firozeh Dumas on the humorous side of growing up Iranian American. This is Living on Earth's winter holiday season storytelling special. And let's hear now from Gokbe System, the musical group pioneered by Mamadou and Sana Ndiaye. Now, Mamadou, you guys play a mixture of hip-hop with the music of Senegal's griots. And as I understand it, griots are the keepers of West African oral tradition. Tell me more about it. What exactly is a griot?
A griot is a storyteller. They used to follow the kings and the queens and got like the whole story of their lifetime. That's the reason why we didn't lose our whole story, because the stories was transmitted from generation to generation. You know, each generation had a griot that was taken care of, knowing exactly what was going on, because those griots were like they had a place that they call like La Place du Village. They call it the tree of talk.
The talking tree.
Yeah, the talk, like everybody will come there and the king will come and like transmit his message and stuff, so everybody knows what's going on. So griots in our culture are really important. Even though we didn't write before, the story was transmitted from generation. So there's a writer that used to say that the griots are the bag of words. Without them, story will be lost forever.
Now, you come from a griot family. And this is something you have to be born into?
Yeah, basically, like, you're born in a griot family, you know, so you basically grow up in a music environment. You see your sisters dancing, your father's, like, playing drums, your mom is, like, telling stories and stuff. So you're kind of, like, born in that and grow up in it.
So you must know a lot of stories, then.
I know some, you know. I will say that we are, like, as you say, we are the 21st century griots, you know, which means, like, it's not like the way it was before, how people were like really like concentrating on that and respecting the whole griot tradition. Because in the past, griot people didn't have to work, you know, they don't go to school. So the village itself, like people in the village, they would take care of them, you know, provide them with food, money, clothing and stuff.
So you're a modern griot, though.
Yes.
So I guess you found a way. I understand you found a way to balance the old and the new, and it's resulted in your musical group, the Gokbe System, which is what? Part traditional Senegalese griot music and part hip-hop, huh?
Yep. It's called Ancient Meets Urban.
Ah. Yeah. So tell us your story of how you got to be where you are now.
Yeah. My name is Mamadou Ndiaye. son of Matar in Fatugay. I was born in Dakar, Senegal, West Africa. And I went to the village to visit my uncles and his four wife. I stayed with one of them, who was a big deal in the griot community. And she and four friends, they would go to village and village, town to town, telling stories, singing, dancing for money, material, and something to support the family. Those days was good. There's always something going on, from dancing, singing, telling stories. I didn't want to go back to the city. And I had to stay there for 7 years. But I had to go back to the city, to Putsuit High School. Life was tough there, because I'm from in a neighborhood called Gina Rai, mean other side of the track. And when you say other side of the track, you can have an idea of the life we were talking about. Poverty. No clean water. My parents had to struggle every day to bring something on the table. So it was really tough. And in the same period, my father was laid over in his job. So it was really, really tough. And I had to leave with 8 brothers and sisters. And at the same time, one day in the 90s, I discovered hip hop. I was just listening to the radio and I heard it like that. And I was so touched, so blown away by the message itself, because it was talking about the life we were living at that time. The same stories that I was going through. But mostly, the connection that hip-hop had with Tasu, which is like the way that griot people was communicating to each other. Something like this. Sabit man na pa sa follow man fumu nek tingalam mabag nak nga deg nak man may rap di khalam ndax deg nak fumu dug nak mudila yela bag nak ndax sa kata makata amatul jalu ba mak ma doxatul wala doxatul lima man ci rap lima bag ci rap fatte liñu fatte fatte ne fatte lañu fat fo jaar ma dabax lako fo jaar ba dabax lako bañu mako bar tax lako tax lako tax lako tepp fi taf lako taf lako taf lako. Just like that. So it was a big connection between griot people and rappers. So that's why I think we call ourselves the 21st century griot. And at that time, I wanted to drop out of school, because knowing like all the things that I was going through in my life. So from there, I had to go to the open market, buy women's clothes, had to prepare them, iron it, and sell it back. And I had another job on making drums and stuff. That job was a hard one, because you had to cut the tree in the forest, bring it in the city, and dig a hole in it so you can have a sound of the drum. And after a while, just, you know, rehearsing, doing stuff with my friend to develop that musical style that I always wanted to be. Because since I was living in the city, to the village, I always had to feel like, wow, I want to do this and share my stories with the rest of the world. And when we start like doing our stuff, we wanted to have our own music, our own sound. And the only way we could get that is to bring our traditional instrument in it, because we understood that hip-hop is about reality, like what you're living in. And the only way to show that was to bring our own touch in it. So we meet Sana. playing this beautiful instrument called accounting. And after we worked for a little bit, we had to present it to our friends. They were so disappointed of us. They was like, wow, you guys think that you can make it with this old instrument and these drums? I don't think so. But we didn't say anything. We decided to keep doing what we do because we believe that we could do something special with it. And after 4 years of working, we recorded a song called Sibore.
Hey, Nandirio Kene.
Which means like, let's go back to the roots. And at that same time, we meet a producer called Tony Vaca. He's from the U.S. And we present in our city, we fall in love with it. 6 months after that, we had our first invitation in the U.S. And a lot of people wanted us to just come here and just stay, do something. Because as they always think, we will never make it with the music business. But we stick to our story and keep doing what we do. And we do that too, went back home and get invited again and again so many times. So this day we decide to live part-time here, part-time in Senegal. And it does work for us. And we doing our thing, touring the world. And thank God we stick to our story.
And that's Mamadou Ndiaye's story of how a modern griot came from Dakar, Senegal to Massachusetts, USA. Mamadou and Sana Ndiaye, who from the musical group Gokbi System.
Yep.
Any comments from you other storytellers who are online here? Firouze?
Well, I just want to say I love the fact that there's so much music involved with the storytelling. Had I known, I would have brought maybe like the theme song to a Kentucky Fried Chicken commercial or something to. But I'm enjoying this. I love hearing this.
Yasir?
Yes, I felt like I wanted to play the oud with that instrument to keep them company. I wanted to play the bass of my oud because that has a high notes. I wanted to play lower notes and join them. They were so in a roll. That was wonderful.
Let's give this a try. Sana, you want to lay down the line that you were playing and Yasir, see what you can do with this. Go ahead, Sana.
We'll be back in a moment for stories of why from Morocco, Iran, and Senegal. Keep listening to our storytelling special right here on Living on Earth.
Support for the Environmental Health Desk at Living on Earth comes from the Cedar Tree Foundation. Support also comes from the Richard and Rhoda Goldman Fund for coverage of population and the environment, and from Gilman Ordway for coverage of conservation and environmental change. This is Living on Earth on PRI, Public Radio International.